haunted, scary stories. The channel that tells you scary stories.
Pencil Thin, As Told to Peter Bernard, read by Madeline Starr. My main boyfriend in high school used to love forcing me to watch horror movies. I always made fun of the girls in the films who would get all dressed up to get chased by a monster or maniac. He, on the other hand, would complain if the girls dressed boringly for their own gruesome murder. He saw it all as showbiz, but back then, I thought those young women characters were idiotic and insulting. It's weird that I didn't get angry at the monsters trying to kill them as much as I got angry at the victim characters themselves. If you're facing unspeakable horror, I reasoned, at least have the intelligence to wear good running shoes. He and I broke up a few weeks before I went away to a prestigious college to study art. As a result, when I got asked out on dates in freshman year, I said yes to everyone, especially if it was an invite to a party. I wanted to meet as many new people as I could, and at the time, I was most interested in meeting boys. I ended up seeing 3 different boys at the same time. None of them seriously, but all of them regularly. We were more friends than anything else. To be honest, I had never gotten serious with anyone yet, even though at the time I would have told you differently. I thought I knew what love was, but there had never been a guy who made me lose control. There had never been a guy who got me nervous or made me stutter. Not until I met Rick, that is. Rick was a senior. He was a football player. He had a rich daddy. He was a frat boy. He was everything that all the guys I had ever known were not. When he came over to talk to me while I was eating lunch with 2 of the freshmen who had crushes on me, I was so surprised I could hardly speak. I remember getting only 1 word out, which was, "Sure," when he asked me to a big senior dance. After he left, the 2 boys whose names I didn't even know both mocked how I said the word. They both joked like they were in love and blew kisses at each other. "We have a different name for Rick," one of them mentioned to me. "Yeah, it rhymes with Rick, but starts with a different letter," the other boy chimed in. Such children. I didn't have to date children anymore. I was going to a big dance with a senior. Needless to say, I got turned out for the event. I bought new heels, really my first very tall shoes. And I got an off-the-shoulder top that matched perfectly with a vintage pencil skirt I found at a local thrift shop. I wanted to go flirty, but not slutty. I was certain I had everything all thought out. My roommate in my dorm insisted on giving me walking lessons in the new shoes, and little did I know it at the time, but she may have saved my life. Rick picked me up in a red Mazda convertible that must have cost his daddy a pretty penny. He made a big fuss over my outfit as I walked out to the car. Feeling daring, I gave him a kiss on the cheek. He chuckled and we went off. At the party, we hung with his buddies on the football team, none of whom talked to me beyond saying hello, and their dates, none of whom were very nice to me either. At one point in the ladies' room, one of the football girlfriends made a snide remark about how Rick's dates keep getting younger and younger. I was surprised he didn't have a steady girlfriend. I told them, and they all suppressed laughs. Rick? Rick is not the going steady kind of guy, I was told. Which I have to admit really bummed me out. Still, these girls were clearly jealous and spiteful, so I resolved to hear them out, but not take what they said at face value. Well, I told them, maybe he just hasn't met the right girl before. They all laughed at me, but not as nastily as before. "You're a sweet girl," a large redhead told me. "Why don't you talk to Marco, who is throwing this party, about getting a ride home? I know he's got a designated driver hanging out somewhere, so he can get you home safe." I eyed the redhead suspiciously. "Are you trying to say I'm not safe?" I asked her through glaring eyes. I only said you're a sweet girl, she answered while touching the tip of my nose with the extra long fingernail of her index finger. I hope you can stay that way. Talk to Marco. She turned on her heels and left, two of her friends exiting with her. My head was spinning. If those girls were lying, then I could be losing out on a great guy. If they were telling the truth, though, they could be saving me from a very bad situation. How could I give Rick a fair chance to prove them wrong without putting myself at risk? I decided to act like nothing had happened, but still keep myself on guard for warning signs. When I got back outside, Rick handed me a drink. But I hadn't seen him pour it, and I didn't really know what was in it, so I put the drink down and led him out to the dance area instead. Finally, I had his full attention, and we both seemed to be really enjoying ourselves. Afterward, Rick involved me in the banter with his friends, finally, and I was really warming up to him. The conversation itself was boring, mainly about how I should loosen up and have a drink. Finally, I said I would have a beer if he would teach me how to use the keg pump thing. It looked like fun, and that way I'd be able to pour the drink myself. I was relieved when this solution seemed to please him. We went back to having fun. Rick thought I had downed 4 beers, but I had probably only had the equivalent of 1 or 2, since I had been dumping most of the drinks in the potted plants around the party. Speaking of potted, I probably had a bit of a contact high as well. That was not a big deal to me, as I had gotten those in the girls' bathroom in high school 6 times. I still felt certain that I was in control of myself and ready for anything that might happen. Rick's buddies started pairing off with girls and leaving the party, and soon, I was back in his convertible heading off into darkness with him. So far, so good. We joked around and flirted as he drove until we hit a very dark road heading through a local wooded area. There was forest on both sides, set about 15 or 20 feet back off the road. Suddenly, Rick slowed the car down, pulled off the side and stopped.
Whoops. Looks like the engine broke down, Rick said sarcastically.
I giggled nervously. Rick, that's not funny. This place is kind of creepy.
Did I say the engine broke down? I meant we're out of gas.
He crooned in my ear, then went in for a kiss. I kissed him back. Something inside said I shouldn't, yet at that moment it just felt like I was born to kiss this boy. It all felt so right. Then we kissed longer and I started to get uncomfortable. He was getting very forceful and when I would pull back, he wasn't getting the hint. He started to grab parts of my body that no boy should grab before at least the 3rd date, not even a senior. I took his hands off me as gently as I could, looked him in the eye and spoke. Rick, honey, you're a special guy, but this is our 1st date, and I won't repeat what he said to me then, but he said it angrily. I felt embarrassed and humiliated because his words revealed that he had no respect for me at all. After informing me that I had failed the test for a possible 2nd date, he leaped out of the car, walked around the front, tore my door open, and pulled me out, throwing me on a patch of gravel on the side of the road. I scrambled to my feet, begging him not to leave me there in that place. When I got close to the car, he slapped me so hard I fell backwards onto my bottom. I now hurt all over and began to weep openly. "Stop crying," he bellowed as he got back in his car. "This is the patch of forest right behind your dorm, you idiot. You're 5 minutes away from home, moron. Just walk through those trees." Suddenly furious, I got to my feet and screamed at him to take me home. But he just drove off laughing. I stood there crying and in shock for some time. I have no idea how long. A part of me told me I better get started toward the dorm. But another part of me questioned whether Rick was telling the truth about that part of it. I took out my cell phone and shone the flashlight app at the woods, squinting to see if I could see anything at all inside or beyond the trees. All I could see, though, were trees. I turned the flashlight app off and... what was that?
Did I see something move in the woods to the left just before I turned the light off? Or was it that I just moved the phone and that changed the angle of the light, making shadows move? I suppose that I should turn the light on again and check, but what if it was something really there? I might be better off just not knowing. I suddenly realized I was living out one of my high school boyfriend's favorite horror movies. Only now I was one of the stupid girls I had always made fun of. How had that happened? It was because of hormones. It was hormones that made me stupid enough to cast myself in this horror movie. I had always done everything right. I had always been a perfect girl and then a perfect young lady. I'd let my guard down only once and... Wait a second. I really hadn't let my guard down at all. This was not my fault. I was mistreated by a jerk who tricked me into going on a date with him. If I was guilty of anything, it was of being too impressed with the glamour of dating a senior and a football player. Who could I even call to come get me here? I wouldn't even know where to tell them I was. Maybe I could figure it out with GPS? I was never good with maps. Anyone I could think of to call would spread the story around the school faster than I figured Rick was already spreading it. I felt sorry for myself and started crying again. Then I heard a snap behind me across the road. Without hesitation, I had the phone's flashlight app on, scanning the tree line. Nothing. Then something. Something white moving among the trees. White and thin. What was that? A deer? Maybe an albino deer? Then I saw part of it move between the trees, much higher than I had noticed it before. Was it climbing the trees? Well then, what was the thin white thing below it? Were there more than one of it? Then came a rustle of leaves at every height, and a thing walked out from the trees out into the open. It was very, very tall, very, very white. I could see no face on it. I could only see a stick body, like a puppet of a man made of white sticks. It had to be 7 feet tall. No, really, it must have been taller than that. It was an impossible thing. It stood there, seeming to stare at me. And I just did the same back. Rather than contemplate the impossibility of this thing and the situation, rather than fainting and falling into shock, what was going on through my mind was whether I could run on gravel faster barefoot or in these dancing shoes. Casually not taking my eyes off the thing, I removed one shoe and stepped backwards. I landed on top of a sharp rock, which really hurt, and I left out a soft whimper. At that sound, the stick man charged directly at me. I put the shoe back on and, limping and mincing, made my way into the forest as fast as I could, which was not fast. I was screaming for help. Once in the forest, I could hear the thing tearing through the brush behind me, and I realized I was going to die. There was no way I could outrun it, even if I had remembered to wear comfortable running shoes to my own murder. All that was left now was to find out how innovative and interesting my killing would be. Would the special effects be interesting or fake-looking? Would the audience laugh at my death? Would they be grossed out by it? These thoughts made me feel insane. I dropped to the ground and lay there, waiting to die. I heard the thing stop behind me after I fell. It was reaching out and touching things around it, but not moving forward after me any longer. I began to wonder if it had any eyes or ability to see. Maybe it was chasing the sound of me. Maybe it stopped because I stopped making noise. I could see it right there, only 20 feet away, behind some trees. Before you can understand why I did the next thing I did, you have to understand that I really thought I was done for and had nothing to lose. I shone my phone's flashlight on its face. It didn't react at all. It had no ability to see. Next, I did something I had actually learned from my ex-boyfriend's horror movies. I found a rock of a size I thought I could throw for a long distance. As silently as I could, I picked it up, picked myself up, and heaved that rock over the stick monster and nearly back out onto the road. The thing tore backwards, away from me, loudly shoving bushes and trees aside to get to what made the noise. Using the monster's noise as a cover, I ran as fast as I could away from it in the direction Rick had indicated my dorm was. I never looked behind me, and I was making so much noise racing through the undergrowth and trees that I had no idea if the thing was behind me or not. I finally got to a clearing, and amazingly, Rick had been telling the truth, and I really was another 100 yards away from my dorm. Now, I looked behind me as I rummaged through my purse for my keys. I couldn't see anything chasing me, but I kept my eyes on the forest and walked backwards toward the dorm. Of course, I tripped and was about to fall on my behind yet again when something caught me. I screamed. But it was human arms holding me. I looked up and it was one of those kids from lunch, the one who had said rude things about Rick. "Oh, wow. You look gorgeous," he stammered, like a puppy dog in love.
"Well, except for all the scratches and twigs in your hair, I mean, but other than that, wow."
"Inside," I stammered to the kid. We need to get inside. I'm sure it hurt us. The stick man is going to kill us."
Okay,
he replied sarcastically.
"What did that idiot put in your drink tonight?"
But then the crashing sound in the woods came back. It was getting louder. It had heard me scream. Staring in shock at the forest for only a second or two, this boy picked me up for real, and he literally carried me back to the dorm. Inside, we both peered out the small glass window in the door, trying to catch a glimpse of what was coming for us from the forest, but it never emerged from the tree line. I looked this kid over. He didn't look strong enough to have done what he just did. I mean, I'm a small girl, but still weigh nearly 100 pounds. When some people get scared, they fall apart. Other people find hidden reserves of strength. "Hey, kid," I nudged him on the shoulder. "What's your name, anyway?" His name, as it turned out, was Jerry. I claimed him as my boyfriend, but only for as long as it took to make him my husband. These days we live in Manhattan and co-own a posh art gallery. We stay as far away from lonely forest roads as we can. Even all these years later, he still stammers like a lovesick puppy dog when I get dressed up. But these days, I wear my pencil skirts with a slit in the back, and I keep sneakers in my purse, just in case I need to run for my life.
Come back for more scary stories.